breakouts today, Wednesday, March 11th, Fantasy Baseball Today. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. Follow us on Twitter at CBS Scott White, at Al Melk, CBS, M-E-L-C, and at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R. Good morning, guys. What's going on? Are you ready for your big field trip tomorrow?
So ready, but we got a little business to take care of first.
Uh-oh.
Well, I think we're going to talk about this later, right? We got a little auction going on today.
Oh, okay, yeah. Wait,
auction action.
Wait until we read the tweets, because that'll come up via
spoiler.
The tweets. Yeah, we have a big draft coming up later today. Scott, what's going on, man?
Same old. Just posted my most recent spring observations blog talking about the Cubs back-to-back-to-back home runs yesterday, Micah Johnson's four-hit game, and other notable spring happenings.
Scott, who's your favorite breakout this year?
My number one favorite breakout. I guess I technically have to say Carlos Carrasco, but I feel like our podcast audience is already fully on board with him. You know, I think Evan Gattis is a big favorite of mine too, especially in rotisserie leagues for the home run and RBI totals I expect him to have as a catcher eligible player. I mean, he's not going to be playing catcher, but that only helps his fantasy value for this year because he'll get all the at-bats those other catchers aren't getting.
And Al, who's your favorite breakout?
Well, I love me some Marcus Semien. I think he's my favorite and guy that I've been winding up with in a lot of mocks. But I'll throw another name out there too, because it's always fun when you pick a guy who seems like a deep league guy, and then he actually becomes relevant. So if Alan Webster becomes relevant, then I'll feel really good about that.
Alan Webster, okay. Now, you guys both like Marcus Semien quite a bit. 24 years old, now he's with the Oakland Athletics after spending time with the White Sox. Why? I don't think it's clear on paper based on what he's done so far in
just
his
look at
brief
his minor
career.
Look at his minor league numbers, and it'll make it clear.
Yeah, but don't you want to see more from him from his major league numbers before you call him a breakout?
Well, sure I do, but he hasn't had a chance yet.
If he had had more success as a major leaguer, he would be a breakout then, would he?
He finished fairly strong after the All-Star break. He hit 273 with a 333 on base and a 485 slugging. Three homers, three doubles, and a triple. It's only 66 at-bats, though.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about this for Semien? He has struggled against righties. Hit 212 against righties last year. He hit 271 against lefties. Is that an issue just knowing the A's like to platoon a lot?
Well, I mean, look, I don't think it's an issue as far as the Athletics tendencies are concerned. They got him to play shortstop. It's not like they have a good left-handed hitting shortstop they're going to platoon him with. Those are pretty hard to find, actually.
Right.
So I think he's going to get a legitimate chance. Now, will he capitalize on that chance? Will he be the player he was in the minors, or will the high strikeout rates he's had so far in his major league career hold him back, bring him down, eventually cost him his job? The latter is a possibility, and that's why you wouldn't want to go overboard bidding on him. I was worried maybe the hot start to spring training where he had that two-homer game early would elevate his value to a point that he wasn't much of a sleeper anymore. But just yesterday in our head-to-head points draft, he went round 19. So I was kicking myself for letting him go in round 19 and not to me. But at the same time, it's not like he's at the top of everybody's lists yet. So you can afford the... It's still a good risk-reward ratio there.
Here's another cool thing about Marcus Semien. He'll soon be eligible at second, third, and shortstop.
Absolutely.
So quite versatile. All right, we got a lot of breakouts to talk about. We got some emails coming up later. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com. Please put baseball podcast in the subject line. No podcast tomorrow because Scott and Al are going up to Jupiter, which is in South Florida, where the Cardinals and the Marlins share a spring training site. They're going to be doing some video.
Know what they say, Adam.
What do they say?
Boys go to Jupiter to get more stupider.
Do they say that?
I think they did. You know, you don't remember that? And girls go to Mars to either be movie stars or eat candy bars. I don't think there was ever a consensus on what girls were doing in Mars. But
well, you can't do both.
Saying.
You know?
Well,
probably a bad formula for being a movie star if you're eating a lot of candy bars.
Just
the thought.
Well, yeah.
Well, they're going to have some great stuff. It'll be on the website, fantasynews.cbsports.com. We did do a mock draft yesterday. Those results will eventually be posted. It was a head-to-head points league. We still have the categories league up right now on the website, so check that out. We'll talk about Abascal Garcia, Carlos Carrasco, Taiwan Walker, and this guy, Oswaldo Arcia. Here's a stat of the day. Oswaldo Arcia averaged 0.607 fantasy points per plate appearance. He didn't have that many plate appearances, but if he had, I gave him 660, which is, you know, I guess what most everyday outfielders could approach. 660 plate appearances. Arcia would have scored 400 fantasy points. That would have made him a top 26 outfielder in points leagues. I would think that his better format would be Roto. So I know he was on Al's breakout list. I think he might have been on Scott's as well. This guy's got some serious power. What do you expect from Oswaldo Arcia in 2015?
Well, I think you just made a nice argument there. And then if you maybe assume in the first half of last year when he wasn't hitting very well, that he wasn't coming off a wrist injury and hit more like he did in the second half, you would have had even more fantasy points.
Oh, yeah. Second half, last 46 games, Arcia hit 13 homers, 8 doubles. He slugged 538. He only hit 249. So, yeah. It's something to consider there with him.
Yeah, it kind of bugs me, too, that he's been such an all-or-nothing type in the majors, because he was anything but that in the minors. Hit 314 in his career there and didn't strike out at, like, an alarming rate that would make you think that'd be a problem. So I still think he's learning, but in the meantime, if he's able to provide home runs for you as, like, a fifth outfielder in a Roto league, I think that's... There's not a lot of downside there.
So you're not drafting him in a three outfielder league?
No.
Al?
No. Last year, during the second half when he was hitting really well, I did pick him up and use him as a third outfielder. But, I would view him as a guy to maybe stream in that format.
Okay. How about Oswaldo Arcia or Michael Morse?
Yeah, I'll go Morse. With Arcia, it's more projecting that he's going to improve. I don't know that he's going to hit for more power. That would really be something. But as Scott mentioned, maybe tap into some of that batting average upside. But Morse, we know what he can do. And he's pretty consistently good as a hitter for average. So, I'll go Morse.
Arcia?
I actually do prefer Arcia just because of Morse. I don't expect him to stay healthy. But, I get the argument the other way.
Arcia or Marlon Byrd?
You know, I feel like I should go Byrd here. I know I have Byrd ranked higher. Arcia has more upside, obviously. Most players have more upside than Byrd. But I feel like a lot of people are unfair to Byrd, who's been a 20 to 25 homer guy the last couple years, good RBI totals, still in a hitter's park. I don't see him having... I see him doing basically the same thing.
I'll take Arcia there, and I think Byrd is something of a regression candidate, especially for batting average.
I'm going to pause the podcast for some trivia. Are you guys ready for a round of trivia?
Sure.
Yeah.
This is kind of tough. You can use your computers if you'd like. How many home runs did Prince Fielder hit in 2007?
That's some trivial trivia, Adam. 2007, was that his – I think that was his rookie year. Right?
I don't know.
I'm just going to guess 35.
I think it was 20, 21, 22.
Oh, man. I hope you guys are wrong. I'm going to double check my trivia answers here because you're making me self-conscious of my own trivia. Hold on. 2007. No, yeah, I'm right. He hit 50 home runs in 2007.
Oh, okay.
All right. His rookie year was 2005. Well, no, I guess it was probably 2006.
2006 was, yeah.
This is considered his rookie year. Okay.
He had 28 that year. I shortchanged him. That was when 28 was nothing. Though,
next question. Everybody. I got to go to the next question here.
Sure.
How many bases did Rajay Davis steal in 2010?
50?
The answer is 50.
I see where this game is going.
How many doubles
goals did Albert Pujols hit in 2012?
Scott, why don't you take this one?
50. How many states are in the Union?
Ooh, contiguous?
Yes. The answer is 50.
Did Gerald Ford think we had 51?
I don't know. But he was wrong, wasn't he?
He would have been wrong, yes.
How many stars in the American flag?
50.
And yeah, how old is Al Melchior today?
32.
Al, happy 50th birthday. What a milestone.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam.
And I went on famous
fielder birthdays.
There you go. I went on famousbirthdays.com. And you according to famousbirthdays.com, you share a birthday with
Dan Uggla.
Dan Uggla, that is true. He's 35. Johnny Knoxville.
No kidding.
Terrence Howard. Very accomplished actor. Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans. He's 22. And Greg Olson of the Carolina Panthers and Miami Hurricanes, of course. He's 30.
You had to sneak that in there.
Yeah. Well, he was the fifth most famous guy. Well, actually, he's more famous than Dan Uggla. So happy birthday, buddy.
Actually, not in Miami.
What are you doing? What are you doing for your 50th?
I'm doing an auction this afternoon. I'm going to have a lovely dinner with my wife tonight. And then this weekend is when we're really going to blow it out and go up to Lakeland for some baseball.
Hey, okay. Well, you look, if you don't know what Al looks like, first of all, get to our website. But if you don't know, he looks 38. Scott, how old do you think Al looks?
That's a good choice there. Honestly, when I first found out, you know, at the time he wasn't 50, it was, I guess, what, 4 or 5 years ago when I found out how old he was? It was probably a decade older than I thought he was.
You guys
yeah,
are
seriously. No, I mean, it's amazing.
Being serious.
Everything about you is very young, except, like, your music taste.
Which is like the taste of a 7-year-old.
And I just last note here, if you had waited until tomorrow to be born, you would have shared a birthday on March 12th with a cooler group of people. Mitt Romney, Liza Minnelli, James Taylor, Ron Jeremy.
I was going to say, was Abe Young born on March 12th?
No, and Daryl Strawberry. Daryl Strawberry. So an older crowd, but a more distinguished crowd. So everybody wish Al a happy birthday because he's the man. Tweet of the day. I got abused on Twitter yesterday. I knew I would. So I'm just going to read these in succession here. Tweet of the day number one is Jeff. He says, Adam doesn't know who Jim Croce is? Ugh. Too busy listening to Taylor Swift 24/7, I guess. Incorrect. But Al told me that Jim Croce did, what was it? Bad, bad Leroy Brown?
That's correct.
The baddest something in the whole town?
Yeah. Yeah. Baddest man in the whole something town.
Yeah, I knew that one. Tweet of the day.
You don't mess around with Jim? You know that one?
No.
Time in a Bottle?
No.
All right, not extensive Jim Croce.
I know Message in a Bottle by, Genie in a Bottle by by Christina Aguilera.
Yeah.
And Message in a Bottle by The Police.
Best Police song, in my opinion. Such an underrated band, too.
I'm not gonna share my opinions on The Police for fear of Twitter response. tweet of the day number two is from Sal. Yo, Adam, maybe keep your pop culture taste to yourself. You have the sensibility of a middle school girl.
Ooh.
Tweet of the day number three is from Uncle Mowgli. I wouldn't trust anyone who doesn't like Pink Floyd. And then real tweets here. Tweet of the day number four from Craig Betts. Marcus Stroman is gone for the year with a torn ACL. Crap! Are the Jays already done for? Hashtag I hate spring training. Dane Perry actually wrote an article about this on the website today, CBSSports.com. What do you guys think? I think the Blue Jays might be kind of screwed here.
Yeah, I think so. They've really got no pitching depth whatsoever. They're in a big bind.
They have a lot of minor league pitching depth. It's just, are those guys ready? I mean, I actually like, you know, I don't like losing Stroman, obviously. Yeah. But for fantasy purposes, I like now what this means for Aaron Sanchez and Daniel Norris, who I do think are both ready. I think if nothing else, it assures Sanchez is going to have a meaningful fantasy role, whether it's closing, or I think now more likely starting.
And who do you like better? Which starting pitcher, assuming they're both in the rotation, Sanchez or Norris?
I'm going to go out and say I think I'm definitely in the minority here that I like Sanchez better.
I think Norris is the better prospect. but Sanchez might be a little more prepared for the role. I would draft Sanchez ahead of Norris.
And do you think this is good news for Brett Cecil?
As much as it can be, yeah. I mean, you know, he's got an injury. We've talked a couple of times about how John Gibbons doesn't really seem to be very interested in letting him close. But, you know, maybe Gibbons' hand is going to be forced here.
Tweet of the day number 5 is from Shan Landfire. Would you guys be doing a mixed roto auction mock?
Yes, today. Happy birthday, Al.
Yeah.
You should have.
So we're doing the best draft. This is my absolute favorite. It's going to take 17 hours, but it's going to take more like 4 hours. But 12 teams, roto. I don't know. Is any of it going to be on the site?
Well, the results are going to be on the site.
They are? Okay. But we are playing it out.
Do it. Yeah, we are playing it out. Did you win it last year?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. And it was kind of a runaway, right?
Yeah, I destroyed it last year.
This is the auction last year where I went all out for Trout and Miguel Cabrera like I said I would, and then messed it up trying to bid up a certain former colleague of ours.
That was all in the same auction.
Yeah.
That was momentous.
Yeah.
I'll have you know. Yeah, you spent like $24 on Jed Jerko because you were trying to outbid him. I had dinner with that guy last night, actually. We had some pizza. It was delicious.
Jed Jerko.
Yeah, with Jed Jerko. Yeah, so I will tell you that I will not be spending more than probably $15 on any starting pitcher. And I'll be focusing on hitting, and I will be trying to defend my crown. But we'll talk about it next week.
We'll see when Ryu's name gets called. How that works out.
He shouldn't go for more than $15. I mean, I'll spend $25.
I won't try to bid you up, that's for sure.
That's a good idea.
Learned my lesson there.
Hey, DL stashes. We haven't talked about that, but Jose Fernandez is an obvious one. Who are some good DL stashes that you could draft and then, you know, DL stash?
Well, I mean, talking about Hunter Pence, is that too obvious?
Yeah.
Okay. So, less obvious.
So beyond Hunter Pence, Mike Minor, Kenley Jansen.
I think Minor might not be so. He should be obvious, but I don't think he'll necessarily be viewed as obvious. So, I think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Worth's still out there, but that's probably a little too obvious. Clearly, my mind is going straight to the obvious guys.
No, but the thing with Worth is I feel like he's going too late. Like, he's crazy late.
I kind of think he is, too. I don't think he's been ruled out for the start of the season
right yet.
I know Denard Span has. Span's another one. But I don't think Worth, that's a done deal.
And Jake McGee, I think, is a worthy stash.
What about, like, some Tommy John guys like Matt Moore? What about Brandon Beachy? Anybody seem attractive to you?
Not in mixed leagues.
Yeah, starting pitcher's so deep. I just never get around to. Patrick Corbin would be another one in a deeper league. Chris Medlin, even like AJ Griffin. AJ Griffin's just coming back from his first, by the way. A lot of these guys are coming back from their second. You know, on the subject of Tommy Johns and second Tommy Johns in particular, kind of a low end sleeper who's gotten on my radar recently is Daniel Hudson, who was throwing 94 in his first spring start and, remember, was a mainstay in mixed leagues before his back-to-back Tommy Johns. It sounds like they're wanting him to be in the rotation, and he's relief pitcher eligible, so he'd be another SPARP. So keep an eye on Daniel Hudson this spring.
Here's a random thought I had when I was looking at some depth charts yesterday. Just trying to decide between Kimbrel and Holland for the number one closer. Do you think the Atlanta middle relief is going to hurt Craig Kimbrel's value? In other words, could they blow some save opportunities for Kimbrel, whereas we don't really have to worry about that with Holland's middle relief?
My first reaction to the Braves' bullpen overhaul this offseason was unfavorable because it seemed like they were going with a lot of has-been closers, which is just not a smart approach, I think. But you know, Roger McDowell is one of the more highly regarded pitching coaches and has success with relievers especially, and they seem really confident with Jim Johnson regaining the sinker that made him so effective for the Orioles. And then they have Arodys Vizcaíno back, who was one of their top prospects a few years ago, and he throws 98. So I think they'll be able to cobble together a good enough bridge for for Kimbrel that it's not so much that and just how many games the team is going to win that has me wondering about Kimbrel's save total.
Yeah, I actually think they have a pretty decent bullpen at
you
the
do?
Very least. You know, James
okay.
Russell, Jose Veras.
Yeah, I don't know. Veras.
Yeah, I don't know about Veras.
Well,
either.
But I mean, he's probably not going to be pitching the 7th or the 8th, and he's serviceable.
Okay. All right, so let's do the injuries, news, and notes quickly, and then we'll get to the breakouts here. Mike Minor is going to start the season on the DL with shoulder inflammation. No structural damage, so that's good news. And the Braves say that this injury is different than last year's. So what round would you be looking to draft Mike Minor in a 12-team standard league?
Well, we just had a standard 12-team league draft yesterday, and I believe he went in round 15.
That's correct.
Which isn't that much later than where he was going before this. I'm pretty encouraged by the diagnosis as both a Braves fan and a Minor supporter. I think he'll be back for the end of April.
Cliff Lee has a partially torn flexor tendon. He may be able to pitch through it, but it seems like he'll need surgery, so do not draft Cliff Lee. Gavin Floyd's going to miss significant time with an elbow injury. Now, the Indians only need a fifth starter twice in the first 3 weeks of the season, but what does this mean for the Indians' rotation?
Well, it means that whereas before, I mean, there are several pitchers that are competing, but it really looked like the top candidates were Danny Salazar and TJ House. Now there's room potentially for both of them.
Yeah.
You do have Josh Tomlin and Bruce Chen and I think Zach McAllister are two.
Okay, let me ask you this. And today in our 12-team mixed league auction, $260 budget with 9 pitcher spots, how much would do you think Danny Salazar should go for? How much do you think TJ House should go for?
I honestly think House is a $1 pitcher because he's not guaranteed of a spot, and he's not guaranteed to be that effective. I mean, he's got some very lopsided lefty-righty splits. He was very, very good towards the end of last season, but it's not a huge track record there. I do like House, but I just in this kind of auction, I don't think I'd go more than a dollar or two. Salazar, I think I'd maybe max out around 10.
Yeah, I think I feel like Salazar is probably worth now what everybody was already drafting him as, because I was approaching it as he's probably not the favorite for a spot. And now that the two of them are open, I think he is probably the favorite for a spot. So, that sounds like an appropriate bid for him.
All right, moving on. Edwin Encarnacion out 4 to 5 days with a back injury. He had a quad injury last year. Is he more injury-prone than at least I've been, you know, as the host of this podcast? Like, should we be paying more attention to the injury-proneness of Edwin Encarnacion?
I guess, but I feel like we fell into this, or you in particular, Adam, fell into this trap with Jose Bautista last year. To me, they're such similar players in every possible way, except Bautista actually plays some defense. So, yeah, I think the injuries Encarnacion has are more kind of annoying than debilitating, like Tulowitzki. So I don't think that's a big deal.
Encarnacion went 12th in our points draft yesterday, which is pretty darn good value for that guy. Jacob Turner, Cubs starting pitcher, is going to miss opening day due to a right flexor strain and a bone bruise in his right elbow. Is this significant?
Not for fantasy.
Okay. Micah Johnson went 4 for 4 yesterday. That's a White Sox option at second base, and he's super fast. So that's
Robin
encouraging.
Ventura says he's drawn to him.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? So is he worth drafting right now, Micah Johnson?
Certainly an AL only. I think our auction last month, I got him for $2 as my middle infielder, and in that format, I thought it was great. Probably not going to be the second baseman to start the year, but there's a chance. And I just don't think Carlos Sanchez, the favorite there, really has anything to offer. So, you know, the White Sox are going for it this year. They got some margin for probably just this year. There's a chance they could re-sign him, but they can only be guaranteed this year. So if Sanchez is holding them back, I think we'll see a switch there.
Is there anything that Johnson's going to give you other than steals?
He's not
punchless. I don't expect a big home run total, but he's not just like a slap hitter either. So I think they'll be. It's hard to predict batting average so young in his career, but I think he could be a decent batting average, depending where he bats, runs scored, and you know, even not even like a Ben Revere RBI type, where he's only going to get you 30 RBI over a full season of at bats. I think he's, if let's put it this way, if he was assured a job going into the season, he would be drafted in roto leagues and at least on the fringes of being drafted in points leagues, I think.
And finally, Arizona third baseman Jake Lamb homered twice yesterday on Tuesday. And meanwhile, Yasmani Tomas is struggling at third base. So what do you guys think of this situation?
Well, nothing else. Jake Lamb has sheer power. Yeah, that was...
Oh, sheer. Oh.
we don't get the joke.
Happy birthday, Al.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, he might not even need more seasoning in the minors.
Jeez. Wow. Okay.
No, I like Jake Lamb.
Well, but I think what's important here is that if you're drafting Yasmani Tomas thinking that he's going to get third base eligibility, it doesn't seem like a certainty at this point.
No. I mean, and if you draft Tomas, you probably should look into getting Lamb as a handcuff.
Well, who would be out, though? Because their outfield, I mean, would that be David Peralta, the most likely to vacate the outfield? I don't know that I'd like that trade-off in fantasy. I think I'd rather have Peralta than Lamb, so... You know, it doesn't matter. Obviously, it's the Diamondbacks' decision ultimately. But I'd be rooting against Lamb in that scenario.
Okay, guys, let's talk breakouts now. Scott's got some breakouts. We've spoken about these guys, but I'll bring them up again. And then he's got some that we haven't spoken about: Nolan Arenado, Evan Gattis, Carlos Carrasco, Gerrit Cole. Nolan Arenado, Evan Gattis, Carlos Carrasco, and Gerrit Cole. Of those four, is there one that you'd be concerned about, you know, not meeting your expectations?
Sure. I think Gattis and Carrasco would be the best two candidates not to meet my expectation. Gattis because he's had some back issues over the years, and obviously a lot of this projection depends on him getting more at-bats. Carrasco just because we're relying on, I think it's a 10-start stretch. A 10-start stretch at the end of last season where he was just ace-like. And I think it was legitimate because, you know, 99-mile-per-hour fastball, he wasn't walking anybody, really seemed like he took a step forward. But still, it's hard to make too much of 10 starts, and it's possible, particularly in an auction like this, if I draft him as my ace, I'll be hurting at starting pitcher.
Now, Nolan Arenado hit .287 with 18 home runs last year. In our draft yesterday, he went in the middle of the fourth round. And, you know, I had the first pick of this draft. Thank you guys again for giving me a mock where I have a top seven pick and not really challenging me. And so at the beginning of round three, my first pick was Trout. And then I took Chris Sale at the end of round two. And then I didn't know who to take in round three. Beltre was gone. Rendon was gone. I think Beltre was gone. And you know what? No, he wasn't gone. Oh, maybe I should have taken him. I didn't even think about that. How come I didn't see him? That's weird.
Who did you take?
I took Matt Kemp.
Oh.
But it's only a three outfielder league, so I didn't necessarily want to take a second outfielder. But I thought Beltre was gone at that point. This kind of ruins the argument. But the point I was trying to make was I was thinking about reaching for Arenado just because after him, like the third baseman, they scare me. You know I love Machado, but... you know, Arenado seems to be certainly above the guys behind him, like Zimmerman and Longoria and Machado and Chris Davis, etc. So I didn't want to reach for him that early. But, you know, what do you think about him in the middle of the fourth round? Basically, I knew I wasn't going to get him at the end of the fourth round if I didn't take him with the first pick of the third.
I feel good about that. I feel like that's exactly where Arenado should be going and where you'll need to take him because... he's an industry favorite and for good reasons. And, yeah, I think the baseline that he set last year gives him that kind of value. And, you know, Scott and I agree with Scott that Arenado's a breakout, you know, because I think there's more potential there for batting average and maybe even more power.
All right. Next, 6-4 for Scott. Mookie Betts, Mike Fiers, Manny Machado, and Michael Pineda. Mookie Betts, Mike Fiers, Manny Machado, and Michael Pineda. This is in Scott's breakouts 1.0. So with the injury to Rusne Castillo, what about Mookie Betts right now, Scott?
Well, I still feel like his value is actually down from when I first wrote this because of the whole announcement of Shane Victorino being the starting right fielder, supposedly. But I've talked before about how my resolve isn't weakened by that because it's dependent on Victorino staying healthy, which he won't. It's dependent on Ben Cherington not making a trade, which he probably will when John Farrell campaigns to send Castillo down to the minors. So, yeah, Betts is going to play. If he's not playing every day on opening day, he's playing every day before the end of April, I think. So I expect a high batting average, 12-plus homers, 30-plus steals, lots of runs scored as the Red Sox leadoff hitter because he gets on base a ton. Yeah, I love him. I love him this year.
Now, where do you guys think Shane Victorino is going to hit in the lineup? I saw on roster reference that he roster resource, excuse me, combined roster resource and baseball reference. I saw that they had him projected to hit leadoff. So I feel like if he hits leadoff, Shane Victorino, or at least toward the top of the order, he's got to be drafted. Because even if he gets hurt after a month, you're going to get him so late, you could just cut him and it won't even affect your team.
That all makes sense to me. I do think that there's some potential for Victorino to be productive this year, and it obviously does hinge on the health. But I think it's very likely wherever he plays that he will bat near the top of the order. And, you know, he's a guy the last few years that I think we went into drafts not expecting a whole lot, but, you know, because he's been sort of sneaky for batting average and stolen bases.
All right, Al, do you disagree with any of those four? Betts, Fiers, Machado, Pineda?
No, I really love this whole list so far. And Betts just has so much talent that I just think there's going to be some scenario where he's going to find regular playing time. But they're all very good breakout candidates.
I really like Pineda. I think everybody does. He had a 189 ERA and a .825 whip last year. The strikeouts were down. He kind of became a different pitcher, especially after he came back from the injury. But it's got to be said, he gets hurt all the time. And he only threw 100 pitches twice last season and didn't throw more than 106 pitches in any game. So they were really protecting him.
Mm-hmm.
Does that scare you?
A little. I got to be honest. He went in our head-to-head points draft yesterday earlier than I would have taken him. I think his better format is probably Roto because the exceptional ratios. I mean, just look at his ERA and whip last year and you'll never have another bad thing to say about him.
But that's not happening again.
Well,
there's no way.
That.
I mean, yeah, like 189 with a .825 whip.
His control for the stuff he has, even going back to his rookie season with Seattle, that's what really stood out to me. So I think you can count on one of the best whips in the league. And I would assume the ERA would follow suit.
Okay.
So if somehow, and I don't expect this to happen, but somehow he's able to go 200 innings, I would expect him to be in the Cy Young discussion. I think he's that good.
Pineda went in round 12, which was earlier than we were used to seeing him be drafted. This was a 12-team league. Here are the pitchers that went after him. Dallas Keuchel, Drew Smyly, Ian Kennedy, Colin McHugh, Matt Shoemaker. Keuchel, Smyly, Kennedy, McHugh, Shoemaker. Among that group, who would you have taken ahead of Michael Pineda?
I actually would have taken Keuchel ahead of him, and this is one of the few mocks where I didn't get Keuchel because I feel like I've been taking him too early every time and that I could wait longer, and this time I waited too long. but he to me is just safer. I agree with Scott. There's Cy Young potential there, but between the injuries and I think some ERA risk, I think the whip is going to be outstanding. I worry about Pineda giving up home runs. So that to me gives him enough risk that I would take Keuchel ahead of him. I would take, there was one other
Smyly, Kennedy, McHugh,
Kennedy.
Shoemaker,
you know, and
Kennedy,
Keuchel and Kennedy are not exciting, but I
yeah,
think
you're damn
both
right
of them are
not.
Going to be solid number three, number four types. Could probably both be drafted as number four. I actually expect both to perform like number threes.
And I'm booing you on Kennedy.
I heard.
Not on Keuchel.
In that format, I actually would have taken all four of those guys over Pineda, mostly because of the injury risk, but also because for McHugh especially, I don't feel like there's a big difference in what they're going to do otherwise.
All right, next group, Travis d'Arnaud, Kevin Gausman, Drew Pomeranz, Yasmani Grial. Travis d'Arnaud, Kevin Gausman, Drew Pomeranz, and Yasmani Grandal. Al, do you like those four guys as breakouts?
Well, I really do love d'Arnaud and Gausman as breakouts. I'm less high on Pomeranz. I like Grandal, too. I worry for him just more about the playing time situation. I think he's probably going to wind up with the lion's share of starts behind the plate over AJ Ellis, but I have enough uncertainty that I haven't really gone after him this year so far. And Pomeranz, there's just such a wide range of outcomes that could happen for him. I think he could be a breakout, but I actually think he could just as easily be a bust because I do worry about the control for him.
Yeah, he's kind of like Pineda Scott in that Pomeranz did not pitch a lot of innings. He had a lot of five-inning starts, and they were very good. I mean, a 2.35 ERA and a 1.12 whip.
Yeah.
But, you know, he made 10 starts last year. Only two of them went more than 5 1/3.
Yeah, I don't think that was as much durability issues as just the fact that they were never committed to him as a starter. They were messing around with his moving him between the bullpen and the starting rotation and not giving him a chance to stretch out fully.
Well, and then when it seemed like they were starting to commit to him, then he busted his hand. So,
yeah,
you know, that was a factor as well.
Right.
Okay, and he's also RP eligible, so keep that in mind for points leagues. Rougned Odor. Who do you like better, Odor or Semien?
I like Semien better. But if they were both just second base, I probably would like Odor a little better.
I like Semien better, just even in the proverbial vacuum.
By the way, according to baseballreference.com, his nicknames, Rougned Odor, are Stink, Stinky, and Roogie. So feel
Roogie.
Free to call him.
Who came up with that? Come on.
Feel free to call him Stinky, you know, Odor.
He'll like it.
I was going to say, I hear he likes that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Jake Odorizzi, Adam Eaton, and Wilmer Flores. Odorizzi's kind of interesting to me. He had some really good starts and some really bad starts. Look at his last 20 starts. Six starts of 7 innings or more and 2 earned runs or less. So great start. Only 11 quality starts, though, overall in those 20 starts. And he gave up 5 earned runs or more in less than 5 innings. So terrible starts 3 times in his last 6. So can Odorizzi be more consistent this year?
Oh, I think a lot of that was park factor driven, and I'm not looking at the game log, and I know
I don't.
There were some
I don't
exceptions.
Think it was. That was the weird thing. Yeah. I'll go ahead and look it up, but go for it.
Well, the thing I find interesting here is that you put Odor and Odorizzi back to back, even though this list isn't alphabetical.
Actually, Scott did that.
Oh, okay. Well, I like that, Scott.
I didn't notice. Sorry.
So, he certainly Odorizzi could become more consistent, but again, it's going to rely on him keeping the ball down and doing better away from Tropicana Field. And that's not something I'm going to draft him with the expectation of him actually doing.
You know what? You're mostly right. Yeah. Those road starts at Baltimore, terrible. At the Yankees, terrible. At Boston, terrible. And in between, the home starts were pretty good. Here's a bad home start against the Angels. You know what, Al? I apologize for that. Yeah, it's basically a home road thing for Odorizzi.
Well, plus we had the agreement before the podcast that on my birthday you would just say I was right, even if I was wrong.
That's true. I guess everybody will have to look up Odorizzi's game logs for themselves and see who's really right here. All right, Scott, tell us about Adam Eaton and Wilmer Flores.
Do I not get to chime in?
Yeah, go ahead, real quick. I just want to get to Al's breakouts because we're at 40 minutes. So.
I do worry about the home runs, too. But I like the strikeout potential, and I think he can improve the walk rate. This is kind of like after Odor for me is the line where, okay, these are for sure my breakout candidates and everyone after, you know, just to give extra names, they're kind of my on the fence breakout candidates. Odorizzi would be among them. I'm never really heartbroken if somebody else drafts them.
Okay. What about Eaton and Flores?
Well, I could say the same thing for them, though it seems like I'm one of the highest people, at least among our group, on Eaton right now. Because I feel like he was kind of a tale of two seasons guys. Last year got off to a really slow start, but then a very strong finish. It didn't show up in the home runs. I think he only had one all year, which people just looking at the totals, oh, one home run, this guy stinks. But he had a lot of extra base hits, and he's shown more power potential in the minors. He's shown more steals potential in the minors, too. I think a lot of people are kind of scared away by the low steals total. So, you know, I see a potential 380 on base guy, maybe even a 300 batting average. You know, I'm not going to count on double-digit home runs this year from him, but I think it's a possibility. And I do think, especially, you know, hearing he's done some work with Vince Coleman this offseason on stealing bases, I do think we're going to see a more effective base stealer. 25 to 30 steals from him is what I'm hoping for. Flores is kind of a deep sleeper, and mostly because he plays shortstop and there's only so many good options out there. I like the way he finished last season. You know, the last month or so, I think he hit around 290 with four home runs. Don't have the exact numbers, but that's closer to what the player he was in the minors. And we saw throughout his minor league career, like he'd go to a new level and he'd be terrible at first and he'd fall off everybody's radar as a prospect. But he would just keep plugging away, and eventually all that consistent contact he was making and the ability to hit the ball in the gaps. You know, he's a high doubles, double-digit home run guy with the potential for hit to average as much contact as he makes. So in NL-only leagues especially, I think he's a good pick.
All right, that's Wilmer Flores, Mets shortstop. Al, I'm giving you about 10 minutes for your breakouts, okay?
Oh, geez.
All right.
You got some wild ones here. Well, we can start with Brandon Belt. Your first group of four is Brandon Belt, Marcus Semien, Scooter Gennett, and Nolan Arenado. We've touched on Semien and Arenado. So Brandon Belt, you feel confident that he's going to break out, or just kind of hoping?
Hoping. Yeah, not really confident there. He's a perennial breakout candidate, but he still hasn't really done it. We get little, you know, teases, power 1 year, on base percentage the next, but not as much power. But he's young enough that he's shown all those skills. And he's young enough that I think he could advance his game to the point where maybe he blends them more in the same season.
How about Scooter Gennett? Very good before the All-Star break, kind of garbage after the All-Star break.
Yeah, and I'm not particularly put off by that, because sometimes it's, you know, that's just how it goes for hitters, and they find a happy medium. But look, if nothing else, Jeanette's not going to be in a platoon situation this year, so just by virtue of more playing time, even if he just kept his ratios static, he's going to break out. But I actually think that there's potential for Gennett to hit with more power than he has so far as a major leaguer.
But he's a career 128 hitter against lefties. I know that they don't seem to have a great option to platoon with him. The best I saw was like Luis Sardinas has an 824 OPS against lefties in 29 plate appearances. So, I don't know. You think for sure he's going to play against lefties, Gennett?
No, I mean, not for sure, for sure. I mean, if he doesn't improve, obviously they're going to have to find some other option there. But I'm pretty confident that he'll be able to stick as a truly everyday player.
Next group of four, Andrelton Simmons is not really on a lot of radars after a bad season. Abisael Garcia is going to turn 24 years old in June, still young with some pop. Oswaldo Arcia, we talked about, and Dustin Ackley. See, Scott, these are like really like interesting sleepers, aren't they?
Or breakouts.
Oh, yeah, breakouts, yeah.
Could be sleepers, too.
Yeah, they are pretty much the same. All right. Well, yeah, we talked about Arcia. The other three, why?
Okay. Well, you're going to see a pattern emerge here, because this is basically guys either who are in situations that, you know, they're going to play more, you know, or have, you know, chance maybe to produce more runs, or it's just guys that have shown more skill at various times than they've, than they've shown all at once. So Simmons is in that kind of Brandon Belt category of somebody who I thought last year was going to break out, and it obviously didn't happen. But, you know, I'm wondering where that power went that he showed two seasons ago, I think it was.
Yeah, it was 2013. He hit 17 home runs.
Yeah, and I still think I've pretty much given up on him as a stolen base source, but I think he does have enough speed that he should be able to hit for a higher average than he's done. And he's not an extreme pull hitter or anything. So I just think that the higher batting average is going to come eventually, and why not this year? And the power, too. It just seems like we could see that return.
All right, Scott, you can chime in on these guys if you want. Simmons, Garcia, and Ackley.
I think probably Garcia is the one I would come closest to calling a breakout myself. But it's a lot of raw ability we're counting on there and not a lot of production as of yet. So I find that there's always somebody who's willing to draft him before I am, because he tends to go in that the same range as like the Jock Peterson. I guess AJ Pollock tends to go sooner, but there's usually sleeper outfielders I like more in that same range.
I wanted to bring up something about Andrelton Simmons really quickly. Now, the home runs were down from 17 to 7 in 2014 compared to 2013, but the runs were also down dramatically. He scored 76 runs in 2013, only 44 runs in 2014, and I'd say the main reason for that was he was really hitting toward the bottom of the lineup. This year, you'd think Simmons is going to bat toward the top of the lineup, right?
I don't know that that's so clear. The Braves have, like, at least three position battles going on in their lineup, left, center, and second. So it kind of depends on that. I would say if Eric Young wins either left or center, he would probably be the leadoff man. And then when Nick Markakis comes back, he would probably be the number two guy. So I'm not counting on that from Simmons, no.
Okay. Well, I think it's worth watching for his value.
It is worth watching, sure.
Yeah. I just want to talk about Ackley for a sec.
Please, because, you know, he's been bad.
Yeah, you know, I assume he's one of the weird ones that you're talking about. But he hit 10 home runs in the second half last year. When I say second half, that's post-All-Star break. So it was actually just over 58 games. So that's obviously a lot more power than you had seen from Ackley before. And there were two things that really supported that as what looked like a legitimate trend. And that is that he did start hitting fly balls more frequently. And he also started pulling the ball more. And the thing is, that's probably not going to be great for Ackley's batting average, but it's not like he was really helping you a ton in that area anyway. And that's a pretty big or pretty dramatic boost in the power ratios. So I think that Ackley could carry that forward this year. And I also want to add that longtime listener Kayla Van Horn has asked me to relay that Ackley will be in a platoon with Ricky Weeks. So that will limit his value somewhat.
Kayla Van Horn's very good. In fact, she got mad at me for not liking Pink Floyd. other than that, I like pretty much everything she says.
So two strong contributions just to the show.
Yeah. Kevin Gausman is a breakout. Al loves him. Here's the rest of the list, and we're running out of time. But Drew Hutchison, Jay Happ, Alan Webster, Trevor Bauer, Brett Oberholzer, Taiwan Walker. So Hutchison, Jay Happ, Alan Webster, Trevor Bauer, Brett Oberholzer, Taiwan Walker. How many of them are standard mixed league worthy?
Let's see. And, so you start with Hutchison there.
Yeah.
So I would definitely include him. And Walker, I would say for sure. Those two, Hutchison and Walker, need to be drafted in standard mixed leagues. And I think that Bauer is a worthy later reserve round flyer. But not a must own.
Who do you like better, Drew Hutchison or Taiwan Walker?
Actually, I like Hutchison better. Walker, I think, does have the higher upside. But if I'm faced with a pick in the late rounds, I'm probably going Hutchison there. I feel more secure in his job security and what he's actually going to bring to the table.
How about you, Scott? Hutchison or Walker?
I go Walker. And I liked him more than Hutchison from the beginning, but man, he generated a lot of buzz with his last spring start. He was getting some high marks from those who witnessed it. Seems like he's focused and determined and all that nonsense that we can't really quantify, but hey, I'll take eyewitness accounts as another piece of the puzzle.
And finally, we have Xander Bogaerts, David Peralta, Zach Britton and Mark Melancon. We talked about Britton and Melancon on the Closer podcast. Xander Bogaerts, guys, is he gonna put it together this year and, you know, break out?
You know, even if he doesn't, I don't have him ranked especially high, but I did bump him up a little bit recently when I realized he hit something like 130 with runners in scoring position last year, and he really did not have many RBI. So I think just that alone, you figure as a young player, he's going to have some improvement, and he's certainly going to hit better with runners in scoring position and have more RBI. So if nothing else, he's going to improve because of that.
I have him on my sleepers list, I think. So it's one of those situations where you could go either way with him. But I like Bogaerts a lot, too.
Cool. Time for emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Didn't get to any yesterday, so I want to make sure we read some today. We got about 5 minutes. See if we can go quickly through these here. This one's from CJ. I'm in a league that has saves plus holds combined in place of saves, along with replacing wins with quality starts. Should I still be grabbing a closer in the mid rounds, or should I hold off and target holds exclusively later in the draft?
I mean, that eliminates the scarcity of that category. So I would think, unless your league is larger than standard, it would make sense to hold off, because there's a lot more options to choose from who will help you in that category.
Okay, but I just want to look up the
holds leaders aren't going to be as high as saves leaders.
Right, so that's why I kind of feel like it doesn't really change anything, because if you get guys who just get holds, you're basically going to have like the worst relievers in this sense. Because they're going to be.
But I don't think you necessarily would. There's tends to be closers available late already, and I would think guys like Ken Giles, Wade Davis, who are going to be exceptional in other categories, are going to go ahead of some closers in this format in particular. So I wouldn't want to invest too much in relievers.
Only four closers had 30 or more, or only four relievers, excuse me, had 30 or more holds last season. So, you know, keep that in mind. I guess I should probably look up how many guys had 30 or more saves, right?
A lot more than that. Wait, how many did you say?
I said four.
Four? Yeah, clearly a lot more than that had 40 plus saves, so.
Yeah, a lot more than that. So I think if you just get holds, guys, you're going to end up losing. But I think, like, if you get maybe two closers and then you're trying to find your third closer and you can't find a guy who's going to guarantee you 25 saves, well, that's where maybe you go, I'll get a holds guy.
Yeah, sure.
I like it. Adam, good idea. Ryan from St. Louis. He says, "Dear Mr. Malone, Mr. Bratton, and Mr. Halpert." I don't know. I don't want to get burned by The Office again.
That actually is The Office. That's Kevin Malone, Creed Bratton, and Halpert.
Okay. Quick and simple keeper question. 15-team auction league. Both Miggy and Stanton are free agents and will be available. Who would you pay more for, Miggy or Stanton?
Miggy. It's pretty much a toss-up, but do think I have Miggy valued a little higher.
P.S., what does Al do in his free time? He seems to live in a cave.
Well, it's funny that Ryan asked that, because I've really gotten into art, and so I do a lot of hieroglyphics on the wall.
And spelunking.
And spelunking, yes.
Al, yeah. what would you say your number one hobby is?
Gosh. Because, I mean, the thing is, I do spend a lot of time watching baseball when it's baseball season. But music, I would say music.
Okay.
I feel like when you ask us what we did last night or during the weekend or whatever, Al always has a more interesting answer than I do.
Well, so Al doesn't have a baby.
I don't know why Al's getting this reputation. I deserve this reputation, dang it.
Okay, a few more here. Jeffrey in Waukegan, Illinois. Grade the trade. Good morning, Robin, Bernie, and Serena. Those would be Williams.
Oh, okay. Geez. Yeah. I mean, Serena, I was like, well, they're not tennis players.
12-team league with 9 pitcher slots, corner infield, middle infielder. I get Prince Fielder and Javier Baez. I give Francisco Liriano and Danny Santana. Wait, Liriano and Santana.
Yeah, I'm like, who's that?
All right, so giving up Liriano and Danny Santana for Fielder and Baez.
I think I'd be willing to do that. you know, you're getting the two higher upside players there, but Fielder especially, in the hope he bounces back. I give that a B.
That's exactly what I give it.
Dan in Amish country, Pennsylvania. Keeper question. 10-team keeper league. 5x5 head-to-head OBP instead of average. Quality starts instead of wins. We can each keep three players for an indefinite amount of time. No penalties. I have Cabrera, McCutcheon, and Felix Hernandez, but I also have Brantley. I'd be crazy to seriously consider swapping Brantley for Cabrera, right? In other words, how crazy would he be for keeping Brantley over Miguel Cabrera?
Oh, okay. I was taking it the other way around. I mean, not crazy, but no, I wouldn't do it.
I think fairly crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scott, on the crazyometer, 0 to 10, how crazy?
I'd go about a 7 there.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking more 5.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on the 7. Al's kind of crazy himself. John in South Carolina, grade the trade. Dear Habit, Rabid, and Babip.
Well, those don't sound alike.
Dynasty League. I give Dellin Betances and Starling Marte. I get Matt Harvey and Adrian Beltre. Give Betances and Marte. Get Matt Harvey and Beltre.
A plus? A. I'll say A. Because Beltre is old, but still. I mean, that's a double win.
Well, I don't know about double win. I do like Beltre a little better for this year. But, yeah, Harvey over Betances is pretty solid. I'll go B+.
Thank you, guys. Great show. Al Melchior, happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you, Adam.
Scott, happy Wednesday.
Same to you, Adam. Just another day at the office.
I'm Adam Azer. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you on Friday with our Busts show.